Save a little more this month. Chime checking accounts have features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe and no monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. Banking services and debit card provided by Bancorp, Bank NA, or Stride Bank NA. Members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to District Baseball. This is our District Nationals episode. I believe this is edition 1.5 of the 2024 season. I am Nick. You can follow me on Twitter at the Coach Moose. He is Trey. You can follow me on Twitter at Reverse2RSOSs and the show at District BSB. Just quick housekeeping. Apologies for no episode last week. A little bit of life going on, so couldn't make it to the platform, to the microphone, to the camera to get an episode out. This week we're just doing audio only because we didn't want to go 2 weeks without talking Nats, but obviously we're happy to be talking to about them at all, and certainly appreciate your support and patience with us as we deal with life and apparently a much better ball club than they were 2 weeks ago. So I can't wait to talk about all of that. But Trey, what's going on?
Nick, I am out of town, which is why we are in a tent setup, and this is audio only, but we will be back next week. You can get to see our beautiful faces once again, which I'm sure everyone was clamoring for this week. But yeah, the Nats, really, weird they were team. Good?
Weird team.
This is a very strange couple weeks for this team, and we will definitely get into all of the goings-on. But they won three series this week, and when you look at the teams, well, pick the team that you would least expect to beat the Nats in the series. That's the team that beat us. So very weird. Nick, you want to go ahead and get us started recapping the Giants series?
Yeah. So at the time we last recorded, the Nats hadn't won a series yet on the young season. Since then, as Trey mentioned, they've won three. So they're now 3-4 in terms of series. So far in the year, and they're sitting at, oh wow, I had to, is it 9-11? Is that the record right now?
They're 10-11 now.
10-11. That's right.
Yeah.
So almost 500. But again, it's early, so we'll see if this is sustainable. We have another series against the Dodgers coming up. But yeah, the Giants series was surprising because we had seen over the years just so many weird series go on in San Francisco. And I know that's, kind of a blanket statement, but it just feels like weird games always happen against the Giants. But they come out fresh off the series loss to the Phillies, and they're going up against the reigning NL Cy Young, Blake Snell, in his first start of the year. And it was just your typical Blake Snell start, like a lot of 3-2 counts, a lot of walks. He went through only three innings, but two walks in those innings. So extrapolate that over 5-6 innings, that's 4 or 5 walks. So, Blake Snell was his typical Blake Snell, but they got to him, right? They're patient, they're hitting. At that time, and I guess still now, like certain guys like Lane Thomas and Joey Meneses weren't really hitting. I think Joey Meneses went 0-4 that game. Trey Lipscomb had a great game. He has since been demoted with the return of Nick Senzel, who we'll talk about here in a little bit. But this was kind of just like the National Series, like, hey, we're not dead. That's kind of how I took it.
Trevor Williams. Well, it was not a very inspired start to the season, so I agree.
No. Trevor Williams pitched a great game, and begrudgingly, we're going to have to talk about him throughout this episode. I, try to avoid that whenever I can, but, it is what it is. Game two was your traditional tight, close game the Nationals love to play. Kyle Finnegan got the save, which he's been better as of late, but at that point it was still a little sketchy, as it always was with Kyle Finnegan. But the real story of that game was Josiah Gray hitting the injured list, which I don't know if we've talked about on the podcast since we last recorded. But, the injury bug for starting pitchers is really going around. And I don't think it's necessarily Driveline's fault, but there are a lot of Driveline guys that are getting injured, the guys that are chasing velo. And with Josiah Gray, I'm not trying to drum up conjecture or anything. I just know this from my experience, granted at, you know, high school and travel level as a pitching coach, when you're teaching and constantly tweaking pitch grips and teaching new pitches, it's a strain on the arm. It's different movements. It's different release points. Like, they had Josiah throwing like 7 or 8 different pitches. And I can't help but wonder, I can't shake this feeling that contributed to it. In addition to just all the other stuff that pitchers do, like chasing velo, like I mentioned. So that sucks. We haven't really gotten any firm confirmation on Josiah's timeline, but he's probably going to be out for a little bit. I mean, we're already talking 2 weeks ago. He's still out with not necessarily any sort of timetable in sight for return. Yoan Adon came up for a game, pitched fine, 4 innings, 1 run. Bullpen kind of took it over from there, pitched really well. And then they got Jordan Hixt, who's kind of an interesting name this year.
Oh, yeah, they did get Hixt.
We should talk about more, but Jordan Hixt, now a starter after he was a reliever, after he was a starter, after he was a reliever, after he was a starter. But yeah, they got Jordan Hixt. Jordan Hixt looked honestly really, really good. So no real issues with that.
Yeah, I can't even be mad at the NASDAQ game. Really, right. He was on fire.
Right. But at that point, you know, the series was already won. So that was a good win. Again, I guess at that point, we didn't know, but we now since know KB Ruiz hit the injured list with an illness. The reports are he's lost like 15 to 20 pounds just because he's been that sick.
Yeah,
still on the injured list. They called up Drew Millis for that game, sent him down just for some, you know, they needed pitching. And Millis, I believe he's since been recalled. But Riley Adams got the majority of the catching duties since then. I'll probably just go through all of the series and we can kind of just talk about the last 2 weeks as a whole, as opposed to the series, just because it's hard to differentiate between, oh, he was really good in this series versus not so good in this series. The A's one was frustrating because Jake Irvin pitched his ass off that first game, and Finnegan, he quote unquote blew it, but it was the 10th inning.
Yeah, that one was
second. Yeah. So I don't necessarily blame him. I just blame the Nats offense for not being able to score off A's pitching. Jesse Winker went deep. Jesse Winker has been great to start the year. Nats come back game two, get a really needed win. Mackenzie Gore was excellent. Just one of the best games Mackenzie Gore has pitched in the Nationals uniform.
11 strikeouts in that one, right?
11 Ks in 5 innings, 4 hits, 1 walk. The 11-1 ratio strikeouts to walks is really what I care about. He's going to get hit sometimes. He's going to give up runs. He's going to give up home runs. But if he can keep the walks down and the strikeouts up, that tells me he has his command. So I was really, really excited to see that. So that was the Mackenzie Gore game. And then the Nats, as we have come to know all too much, bullpen game, or not bullpen game, but the bullpen blew the game in the rubber match on that Sunday, that third game. So the Nats dropped the series to the A's. I mean, what was, before we move on too much and I talk forever, but what were your initial reactions exiting that A's series with the Dodgers coming up?
It was a Davey special on that Sunday.
That's kind of how it felt. I wrote an article about it, and I got hammered.
That was a Davey special, and I mean, that day the offense showed up, 6 runs. Trevor Williams was throwing a great game, and you know, I'm okay with pulling him early because he's not good third time around the order. We know that. My issue was the guy that he brought in to replace him.
Yep, for the third day in a row.
Which was, and at that time, I also wanted Williams out of the game after those 5 good innings. I felt like we should have just taken that because he was starting to give up some hard contact at that point in the game. I was like, all right, let's take it. Let's get somebody in clean. He ends up going back out. He gives up some base runners. Shouldn't be a big deal, but the problem is Davey brings in Derek Law. And so far this year, Derek Law has been immaculately great in innings that he starts clean and awful in innings that he starts dirty. So and we knew that at that point, like this wasn't a thing that we didn't understand. But Davey put him in and it exploded. And then he tried to put in the fireman from last year, Jordan Weems, and he didn't even have it. So at that point, it was all screwed. The bullpen in general hasn't been as strong as I anticipated. They haven't been terrible, but Hunter Harvey's been unbelievably good. But basically, it's been not kind of hit or miss. But yeah, now heading into that Dodgers series, I was like, so we know at that point, we know that Mitchell Parker is making his debut in that first game. And so I'll be honest with you. I expected him to get destroyed. I don't think I'm the only one. You're going against that roster. And before, you know, they had just lost a series too. So I'm thinking, oh God, they just lost the series. They're going to come back with a vengeance. And that's kind of how I was feeling heading into that.
Yeah. So, you know, we drop a series to the A's and you got the Dodgers right on deck, no day off. This doesn't matter a huge amount, but like on Jackie Robinson Day, you're playing the Dodgers, like, you know, it's going to be like a big crowd. It always is in LA. So it's just like, damn, like the Nats have the deck is stacked against the Nats right now. A rookie pitcher, stacked lineup on the other side. A lot of, excited fans in the stands. But Mitchell Parker, man, credit to him doing something that the Nats haven't had the fortune of having since Steven Strasburg. And that's a rookie pitcher winning his debut. Mitchell Parker broke a really, really ugly streak. I think Nationals rookie pitchers in their debuts had an ERA above 11. And, you know, that's dating back forever. I mean, that includes guys like Cade Cavalli too, you know? So it's not just like a random guy who had to make a spot start because there were so many injuries. It was like, you know, quality guys too, quality prospects that really struggled in their debut. But here's Mitchell Parker, you know, striking out Mookie Betts in his first career at bat, right? First career hitter face strikes out, you know, a reigning MVP. You know, 5 innings, 2 runs, 4 hits, no walks, 4 strikeouts. Really in control of his stuff. Bullpen, you know, shut it down. I think Harvey gave up a run in an inning in a third that game, but the offense had done enough at that point. Off of, it wasn't Glasnow. Glasnow was game 2. Oh, it was Glasnow.
Glasnow was game 1. Luis Garcia got him.
Yeah, Luis Garcia had a great game, and that's someone we'll have to talk about after we're done with all the series recaps as well. But that was a great start. Like, just winning that first one, you know, you're not going to get swept. It just, you play a little bit looser after that. Game 2, they dropped by a score of 6-2. You know, it is what it is. The Dodgers, they're not going to stay down for long. Yeah, but it certainly helps when they're facing Patrick Corbin, arguably the worst pitcher in baseball. Like, only about 26 more starts or so, everyone. Like,
I know, we're almost done.
We can make it. But honestly, like, you know, Corbin did provide a service. And what I mean by that, I don't even mean it as a joke. It's like, he went 6 1/3, right? He's saving the bullpen. Like, so often we're seeing Mackenzie Gore go 5, Trevor Williams go 5. Like, no one's really pitching deep into games. And so the bullpen, like, there's going to be guys that just get overworked because they're having to pitch 4, sometimes 5 innings every single game. So Corbin going at least a little bit deeper, in a losing effort, definitely served a purpose. And then game 3, the rubber match, the Nats shut out the Dodgers. And that was on the back of Jake Irvin, who has really been a surprise this year. One of my breakout picks, been super impressed with him so far. I will say, like, the underlying numbers aren't the biggest fan of him. Like, his ERA, I believe, is in the 3s, and his FIP is like a 5.3. So, you know, I'm not going to focus too much on that, but he's been performing well so far. Blanks the Dodgers. That's going to be impressive to do no matter who you are at any time of the year. Blanking the Dodgers is really impressive. And the offense did just enough. 2 runs in the first, and that's all they needed. CJ Abrams, again, another guy we'll talk about here in a little, real freaking deal, man. He has been really, really, really good. And Jesse Winker, I mentioned him before. He's been really good for this team too. So yeah, Nats win the Dodgers and overall come home after a long road trip, 9 games with what, 6 wins, something like that.
Five and four trip.
That's a success. That's a huge success. Only one day off in those 9 games. Come back day off, big series against the Astros. Of course, lose Friday night. They get Justin Berlander'd. in his return. Yeah. You know, they see Blake Snell, they see Blake, Tyler Glasnow, they see Justin Verlander. Like, tough starts to each of the series. Lose to Justin Verlander. Mackenzie Gore, not his best stuff, but I thought he pitched fine. But here they come, the scrappy Nats on Saturday.
Yeah, I know. We have to say it because they were.
Yeah, have to say it. Have to say really it. Two runs Saturday. In the ninth to tie the game, and then walk it off in the 10th. It included Lane Thomas throwing out a guy at home, and of course Joey Meneses of all people getting the walk off on Saturday in extra innings in the 10th. And then they blank the Astros in the rubber match on Sunday. And it's so weird, but like Mitchell Parker is just,
he's that guy.
he's becoming a guy that might need to stay up. Eventually people will catch, or like by people, I mean teams. Eventually teams will catch up to mm-hmm. him. Like they'll get a true scouting report. They know Parker throws a lot of strikes. He hasn't walked anyone in his two starts, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. He went 7, only 3 hits, no walks, no runs, 8 strikeouts. And he's not really a strikeout guy, but striking out Astros hitters 8 times, including getting Yordan Alvarez looking, which is incredibly impressive. Mitchell Parker is becoming a guy. He's basically like this year's Jake Irvin, where it's just like, okay, I don't know if we can demote this guy. Like, he's doing a huge service to our rotation. And
he's Josiah Gray out.
With Josiah Gray out, there's not like an immediate rush to make a decision, but Parker is certainly making the decision for the Nats easier or harder, depending on your perspective. But Nats win their series against the Astros, who are also playing poorly. If you listen to District Baseball yesterday, we talked about the Dodgers playing poorly. The Astros are really playing poorly, but the Nats are beating up on bad teams right now. So, credit where credit is due.
Yeah, you can only beat us on your schedule. So yep. we're just beating up on the bad teams.
Yeah, like the Dodgers and Astros, sorry-ass teams.
I'm down for the Astros to become bad. That's cool with me. We can end that dynasties quick. Yeah, no, I mean, Mitchell Parker, I want to start with him because it was the most recent game. His command was immaculate. Like,
really, really good.
He's painting corners with his fastball. He's tunneling his fastball and his breaking ball as well. He's throwing a pretty nasty splitter that mm-hmm. I was not expecting to have as much deception as it did. It's not like a huge dropper, but it really is a splitter that looks like a fastball for about 75% of the path, and then it just the bottom falls out of it. His command was the biggest factor, because I don't think in terms of raw stuff he's necessarily the best. The fastball is like pretty solid. He's got good extension. That's going to help him because he doesn't throw that hard. But 92. If he's going to command the ball like that, it doesn't matter. I mean, if he like no walks, but on top of having no walks, he's painting corners. It's not just throwing strikes. Like this, like he was wherever he wanted to put the ball, he put the ball. And that's, I mean, if you can do that, it doesn't matter what your stuff is. You're going to be able to have success for the most part. So if he's going to continue to locate, I mean, obviously eventually he's going to have some stinkers. He's a rookie. It happens. But if he can, can be more consistent throwing good quality strikes like this, I'm absolutely down to keep him in the rotation. We'll have to wait and see what Josiah's timeline is. Maybe this is wishful thinking, but Trevor Williams has pitched well to start this year. Maybe he gets a trade offer, and then you just kind of, when Josiah's back, you just move Mitchell Parker into that rotation with him.
Yeah, and keep in mind, Cade Cavalli is going to be back at some point too. Might not be till later.
That's true. Yeah, maybe they go 6-man again like they did last year.
Yeah, I think, let's say, wishful thinking, Trevor Williams does get moved. Cade comes back, Josiah comes back. I think with Josiah's injury this year, Cade's injury over the past 18 months or so, Mitchell Parker being a rookie, it just kind of makes sense to go 6-man at that point. They did it for spurts last year. I think they can do it this year if it comes to that. And even Jake Irvin, like being a younger guy, stretching him out over a full year, because he obviously wasn't with the team the full year last year. So I think going six man at that point would just make a lot of sense for the Nats. But I'm excited. Like, it sounds so backhanded when I say this, but like, we just haven't had this be a thing for the Nats in a long, long time. And by that, I mean having a pitcher with like little to no expectation come up and provide value. Like, it sounds so just commonplace or expected, but like, it's something's going on. And, you know, I'm hesitant to give too much credit to people who don't deserve it, but the person I will give credit to is Sean Doolittle. I'm positive he's having some sort of impact, especially on the lefties, but like, I'm positive he's having an impact on Mackenzie Gore. I'm positive he's had an impact on Mitchell Parker, because I see Sean Doolittle's like game and strategy in the way they pitch. So Jake Irvin as well. Yeah, Jake Irvin as well. So it's like,
it's fastball.
That aspect I've just been really excited about. So it's nice to see, you know, the Nats get something out of those, you know, bottom half of their top 30 prospects, you know, Jacob Young, Mitchell Parker now. Like, it's exciting. But this isn't to say, you know, they're going to be all-stars, but they don't have to be. So I just want to temper expectations, but also kind of like enjoy this while it lasts before the verdict gets out. The other guy I want to mention, I mentioned Luis Garcia, but I'm going to start in the obvious one. CJ Abrams has been exceptional. Like, everything you would have wanted him to do, you know, in terms of taking that next step and more. He already is at 6 home runs. He's pulling the ball in the air way more, which goes against the entire Darnell Cole's philosophy. So, this is one area where I will not give the coach credit, because I know for a fact that's not necessarily Darnell Cole's. That's just CJ Abrams playing to his strengths, which I think more guys should do. But CJ Abrams has been truly, truly exceptional. His OPS, I believe, is still over 1,000. Him at the top of the lineup is just great. I hate the lineups where they bat him second. It's so stupid. Just stop displacing your best hitter. It makes no sense. And I like Jacob Young, but like, he's, stop trying to make him a leadoff guy. Just keep him at the 9 hole. CJ Abrams has just been exceptional. His defense is so much better than it was last year. He's grown up right before our eyes, man. I just can't say enough positive things about him. I'm so, so excited for what the season has in store for Abrams.
Hopefully this is the last time you'll hear this ad, because with Chime checking account features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe and getting paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit, you can probably treat yourself to an ad-free upgrade to spend more time listening to your favorite podcasts, or at least grab yourself an extra morning latte this month. Join millions of Chime members who work on their financial progress with fee-free overdraft and no monthly fees. When you find new ways to save, you can reach your financial goals easier and still have the occasional treat. Take more control of your finances and say goodbye to monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. That's chime.com/goals24. Chime. Feels like progress. Banking services and debit card provided by Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I mean, coming into yesterday, I believe he was leading the entire league in slugging percentage. I mean, imagine thinking that at the beginning of last year when he had like one homer for a while. I mean, it took him a while to get really going. I mean,
yeah, it was late May.
He was hitting ninth. And once he got in that leadoff spot, we know what happened. But I mean, this is just, yeah, we weren't expecting the power to come at this level. I mean, obviously going to be tough to sustain it, but I mean, I don't know. I think to an extent this is sustainable. I don't know if he's going to end with a one dot, but could he end with a 900? I wouldn't put it out of the question right now the way he's swinging the bat. Right. And I think it's really funny. I like his chase rate is really bad on paper, right? Mm-hmm. He swings at everything. But he hits everything. It doesn't matter where it is. He loves to go down and dig a pitch out that's at his ankles and rope it into the gap. And you know what? If you can do it, do it. So I don't care how much he's going to chase. Everything he hits is a missile. So give me more of that, that same aggressiveness. And by the way, other teams, really need to read a scouting report on CJ Abrams. He's going to swing at the first pitch. It's going to happen. And they keep throwing him fastballs in the zone. And he keeps mashing them. And I'm just like, one of these days, someone's got to realize, hey, maybe we shouldn't throw this kid a first pitch fastball.
Yeah, let's not.
I don't know. That's just me. Let's throw something out of the zone and maybe he'll chase it. But yeah, he's been unbelievable. Right now, he's putting up MVP numbers. I mean, I'm just like giddy. I can't even get my words out.
Yeah, truly.
He's been so good. And every at bat is must watch. Every time he's making a play, it's must watch. It's, I mean, electric.
And
electric. I mean, we use that word, I feel like, too much. But man, he's lightning at the top of that word.
Right. And the big knock to CJ's offensive game last year was he doesn't get on base enough. Like, you can be a leadoff guy, especially on this team as currently constructed, but he doesn't get on base enough. And like, yeah, the hits are coming in bunches right now, but he's also walking at a much higher rate too. He was 6% last year. He's 10% this year. If he can stay at 10%, he's going to be just fine. His on-base percentage is 358 right now. Even if the slugging comes down a little bit, I will take a 358 on-base percentage from CJ Abrams every single day. So I think,
and he's been selective too. Like, he's picked his spots to be aggressive and he's picked his spots to be patient. And I feel like that's showing the maturation of him as a hitter.
Right. And it's funny because, like, you'll look at the stolen base numbers and he's not nearly on pace, that torrid pace he was in the second half of last year. It's because all of his hits are extra base hits.
That's true. He's always staying on second base, third base.
He doesn't get a chance to steal home plate. Yeah. So if that's the trade off, right? Steal less bases in order to, you know, get more total bases. I'm cool with that.
I think I'm right.
Yeah. I am cool with that. So just super excited. Yeah, these numbers probably will come down, you know, over 162, but man, it is super fun to be in the middle of it right now. So big fan of CJ Abrams and everything.
Appreciate it while it's here for sure.
Yeah. I'm not going to spend too much time on him because I just don't see it being sustainable, but Jesse Winker been great. I would try to trade him as soon as possible, honestly, because I think he has immense value as a DH to a DH needy team to an offensive needy team. But he's been great. And, you know, so many times we hear about veteran leadership, but at this time it feels like veteran leadership, but not at the expense of production. So Jesse Winker has been great. Mm-hmm. All credit to him, even to Mike Rizzo for just kind of taking a flyer on him. It was a perfect guy to take a flyer on, and it's really paid off.
I love the way he's been taking his at bats. Sorry to cut you off.
But no, like, you're good.
I mean, it's again the opposite of the Coles approach. He is seeing so many pitches, and I think that's helped him be selective. And he's fouling off tough pitches as well. Like, that's the thing that you don't think about too much. But just being able to you know, fight and get rid of those pitcher's pitches to get to another pitch. He's been doing that all season long, and I hope that he can just keep it up for enough time to get a trade, and honestly beyond, because I've actually really enjoyed him so far in the year, so I am rooting for him. But yeah, they should be able to get something for him if he's hitting anywhere close to how he is right now.
Yep. Couple other guys that would just deserve quick shout outs. I guess just a quick one, not as big of a shout out, but Jacob Young, his bat's slowly starting to get there. So hopefully the,
defensively OPS, and speed. I mean,
yeah, if he can just get on base,
he's fun.
Yeah, he's super fun to watch. Riley Adams has been exceptional filling in for KB Ruiz and just further proving that he needs to be this team's DH. He has to be. Like, he is so much better, leaps and bounds better than Joey Meneses. Drew Millis is already on the roster. Just leave him there. Like, I know Meneses had two hits yesterday. I know he had the walk-off. I know they're still going to give him chances. But, like, DFA Rosario, DFA Meneses, like, yeah, they're just so unnecessary to this team. So, we've been clamoring for regular Riley Adams at-bats forever now. We've gotten at least a small sample size, but this is the most consistent Riley Adams has played in his entire career, and he's still sustaining an OPS above 800, a respectable batting average. I mean, it's more than respectable. It's 293, right? But even if it was like 260, I'd be more than fine with it with an 863 OPS. So I think you're on board, but I really need to see more Riley Adams one way or another.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've been hitting that button for a while now. I think everybody wants to see it. And yeah, this is the first time he's gotten consistent playing time, and he's making use of it, and he looks amazing. And, he's hitting 293, but also most of his hits are extra base hits, yep, similar to CJ. So he's slugging as well. And that's big, because this team needs slug, as we know. But yeah, he's been really good. And then Luis Garcia.
Yep, that's the last one.
Been really, really good. And you know what? I mean, the bat's been good, but I'm starting with the glove, because he's been all over the place on defense.
Making only plays he was a little bit more athletic, though. Gonna...
Yeah, I know. Well, there was an incident. There was a Twitter incident the other night when he was, I mean, I don't understand it. I'm not going
to. We don't have to talk about it. I had to make the joke.
It's funny. It's definitely funny. But yeah, and then he's been excellent defensively, and then the bat has been really good too. He's not – I don't think he's ever going to be the pulled fly ball guy. He loves to go to the gap in left center field. That's where he wants to hit it, right over the shortstop. And you know what? If he can hit over 300, so be it. If he wants to hit it over the shortstop, he's hitting the ball with power to the opposite field, although if he pulled the ball, I'm sure – his homer numbers would go up a little bit, but he's hitting a lot of doubles, and he's been clutch. He's been driving in runs. I don't love him in the cleanup spot.
No, I hate it.
It worked out yesterday, but I'd rather see him hitting like second right now, the way he's been hitting right behind CJ. Come on. That's a fun 1-2 punch right there.
Yeah. Like I'm super, I, Luis Garcia is just someone I just couldn't figure out what my opinion was of him. Not the talent has always been there, but you know, if the Nats are concerned about not necessarily character, but like your approach and preparation and stuff, and it's such a public knowledge thing, like that tells me there was like legitimate issues with that. I think that's fair to say. So I just thought he was just a very much, I was just preparing for him to become a Brave one day and just have a 900 OPS and be a like perennial Nats killer. Like that was where my head
Which
was leaning.
Happen.
It certainly could still happen, but he was just such a change of scenery candidate in my mind. It's nice to see that, you know, some of that potential is being tapped into now. And I think it's safe to say he's going to be the second baseman for a while, like this year. We'll see if any of the doghouse incidents pop up throughout the year, because last year kind of came out of nowhere too, in my mind. But obviously, you know, those in the clubhouse know way more. That being said, like he's batting 317, 824 OPS. Great, great numbers. I just don't see him finishing the year anywhere near there. Like even in his very small sample size, but even in his last seven, he's hitting 292 with like a 760 OPS. That seems a little bit more kind of where he would be at in my mind. Maybe like a 270, 280 hitter, 760. Yeah, I would take that too. I'm just saying, you know, pump the brakes a little bit. I don't think he's going to be an all-star or anything like that, but it's certainly nice to see something more from him than what we've seen in the past couple of years. Cause this is year five with him. And it's crazy to think about, like we're entering year five with,
it is crazy because he came up way too early of necessity, you know, and that the COVID year was so strange. So, I mean, maybe that probably didn't help him because he didn't really have as much development time, but that is crazy to think about. This is year five with Luke.
Yeah, wild bits and pieces of a couple of years, but this is year five of us seeing him. So
hey, look good though. Hopefully he can keep it up. I really am rooting for him.
Yeah, he's still only 23, so definitely room to grow. What'd you say?
That's crazy.
The fact that he's still so young and we're so old. Yeah, awesome stuff. Yeah, so that was kind of the rough recap of the past 2 weeks for the Nats. It's been generally more good than bad. So, you know, you take it for what it is. How are your thoughts on the team now compared to where they were?
Huh, that's an interesting question. Because there's still a lot of issues. This team's really top heavy.
Yep.
Really, really top. I mean, most of the production is coming from CJ and Jesse Winker and Luis Garcia and Riley Adams. And it's like those four. And that's mostly it.
Adams is going to lose his starting spot here soon.
Yeah, most likely. Man, please somehow get him in the lineup. The starting pitching staff has been a lot better than we expected. Basically, right now, you've got four chances to win and then Patrick Corbin. and that's better than we thought. We thought it was going to be like two chances to win and then Patrick Corbin and Trevor Williams. And then kind of, you know, what are you going to get with Jake Irvin? So they've been an improvement. So I'm definitely leaning more optimistically considering who they've beaten the past 2 weeks, you know, perceived playoff contenders. I know the Astros and the Giants haven't been that great, but, even the Dodgers have struggled, but they're the Dodgers. I mean, that's you beat them in a series. If somehow they walk in and beat them again at home, I might be thinking wild. About like this team might have a chance to like not I'm not saying make playoffs or anything, but you know, be better than we thought if they can manage to do that again. It is really tough to beat a team twice like that, especially a team with three future Hall of Famers at the top of the order. So I'm not really going to take that as like, if they end up losing that series, I'm not going to be distraught about it. They've been pretty freaking good. I'll give them some leeway on that, but, I'm cautiously optimistic, I think.
Wow. Look at you.
I know. I thought that's what I was going to be at the beginning of the year, but then it didn't really happen, but you know, they're playing better. The issue though, again, is the depth, and it can really rear its ugly head. Like if CJ slows it down at all, if Jesse Winker slows down at all, Lane Thomas is a black hole in the lineup. Eddie Rosario is a black hole in the lineup. Joey Meneses is a black hole in the lineup. So if you don't have the guys at the top doing enough, then you might find the offense having some struggles. So some of those guys either need to get it going or they need to be replaced by there's a guy in AAA that we really want to see. And he's cool and he could come up and play and that would be dope.
Yeah. That's a whole other conversation that we'll probably have to table till next week. Or just a later episode. Like James Wood is kind of proving he deserves to be up. But we've since passed the, I can't remember the acronym for it, but the deadline to call up guys in order to be considered for the extra draft compensation if they win rookie of the year or whatever. So now there's a conversation of like, oh, don't call him up too early because we don't want him basically to manipulate his service time, which I've always been against. I get it from like a business standpoint, but the Nationals stink. Like I know they're playing better right now, but they stink. Like they shouldn't be in the business of, you know, keeping their good players down. It makes no sense. They should be trying to field the best team possible. I think most people would agree with that. So that part's frustrating, but we're going to see James Wood at some point. But it just might not be for a little while, unfortunately, until some of these players get DFA'd or moved or off the roster, however it unfolds. So like the Dodgers are coming up. I don't know. Like, I didn't think the Dodgers series would go the way it did last week. So like, I am still leaning Nats lose 2 of 3, but I could be completely wrong. Cause the Dodgers aren't really playing like the Dodgers we've come to expect. To me, the real teller will be the Marlins series, which is a 4-game set.
You know what? I was thinking about that earlier because I was like, you know what? It doesn't matter if they're bad. They're our demon right now. We have not been able to slay for like 3 years.
I'm glad you bring that up. Since 2020, the Nats are 21-40 against the Marlins. That's a .344 win percentage.
Wild.
Yeah.
I think they were better last year than the previous two or something.
Yeah, the Nats,
which makes no sense, but last year the Marlins were kind of good.
Yeah, they struggle against the Marlins for some reason, and the Marlins are really, really bad right now and really, really injured. So if the Nats can win 3 of 4 or potentially sweep, then I'll kind of have a good pulse of where they are. If the Nats...
If the
Nats split, like, I'm not going to be like, oh, this team stinks. But if the Nats get swept or only win 1 of 4, then I'm going to be like, oh, same old Nats, if that kind of makes sense. So the Marlins are my litmus test right now.
And it's one of those things where it's like, you got to beat bad teams. If you want to be a good team, you got to take care of business. So right now the Marlins are a bad team. The Nats have struggled with them. But if they can go in and take care of business, you know, we might be leaning towards a little bit more optimism.
Yeah. And then after that, like, I'm not trying to look too far ahead, but it gets tough. Like, you have the Rangers, you have the Blue Jays, you have the Orioles, you have the Red Sox. It's not an easy stretch.
American League action.
Yeah. Not an easy stretch to end April and leading into May. So they need to beat the bad teams when the bad teams come up on their schedule. And that includes the Marlins and sort of right now the Dodgers. Like, they've already proven they can win a series against the Dodgers. Now they need to prove they can do it again. And now they're at home with a day off, right? So in theory, they should be much better. The Dodgers just having traveled here today, you know? So in theory, the Nats should be in a better position than they were last time, but you know, we'll see. Like, it's still the Dodgers. It's still the Nationals. So you never want to get too ahead of yourself in that regard. But yeah, so I guess we'll just wrap the show the way we always do. Let's call our shot. How does the Dodgers series? Let's do Dodgers and Marlins series. How do the both series play out over the next 7 games? What's the Nationals record?
Next 7 games, I'm gonna go 3-4. I think they win 1 against the Dodgers this time around. Corbin pitches tomorrow, so they'll probably lose that one. Maybe Jake Irvin. Also, another thing that we didn't really talk about with that is, you know, when you face a team for the second time in a row, it can be kind of hard for your starting pitchers. So, but then, you know, the Nats offense also saw them. So we'll have to see. Maybe this could be a high scoring series. And then I'm thinking they're going to split with the Marlins. I'm not ready to proclaim them as slayed this Marlins demon until I actually see it with my own 2 eyes. So I'm gonna go 3-4, but it wouldn't surprise me if they went 4-3 and took 3 of those from Miami.
I like that. I'm actually gonna steal that and pick 3 of 4 as well.
We can't be too optimistic. We're not at that level yet.
No. Can't.
We're still cautious.
But I will go 2 of 3. Or sorry, 1 of 3 against the Dodgers and splitting with the Marlins. This team, I still can't figure it out. Obviously, it's early. There's still much to left to see before we have to form any sort of conclusive opinions. But I'm still not convinced this team is good. I just think they have fight in them, which we obviously like to see. But I just don't think this team is still very good. I'm fully expecting Patrick Corbin to lose tomorrow. And then, you know, we'll go from there. But I think he'll pitch tomorrow and then once against the Marlins. So there's two losses right there. So without Patrick Corbin, the Nats go 3-2. So if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah, I mean, right now he's the black hole in the rotation. I feel like everybody else at the moment gives you a chance to win. We'll have to wait and see how that, you know, pans out. But
yeah, so Gore will only go against the Dodgers. Irvin, I think if my mental timeline matches up, I think he'll go the final game against the Marlins on Monday.
Yeah, he goes Wednesday.
Parker and Williams the Dodgers, will out the right. Marlins. Yeah. So two losses with Corbin. You'll probably mix at least two losses in elsewhere. I think that's reasonable. So yeah, 3-4 over the next week for the Nationals, which, I mean, honestly, if they're going,
wouldn't be the worst. I wouldn't hate it.
Yeah, it's like it's generally fine, but over a full season, you know, kind of gets you to where you would expect this team to be, you know, about 15 games under 500 or so. It's kind of where I had them. No, it would be more than that. Math, not my strong suit. So 15, they were 20 games under 500 last year. So yeah, more than that. I don't know. Math, it's late. This is our second episode of the night, but yeah, 3-4 over the next week. All right, so kind of just a rough recap of the last 2 weeks of the Nats. We'll see how the next week unfolds with kind of two opposite ends of the spectrum with the Dodgers and the Marlins over this next week. Trey, anything else you want to touch on before we wrap up?
No, I think we got everything that we want to talk about. I mean, it's just a pretty solid couple weeks for the Nats, which is rare, and I liked it.
Yeah, it would be nice if we got a little bit more of that. I'll just leave it at that. But yeah, it's been a pleasant stretch for the Nats. I would like to see it continue. I would also like to see James Wood up sooner rather than later, just saying. And I would also like to see a lot of stuff I'd like to see, but I would also like to see Riley Adams in the DH spot, Meneses to the bench, Millis stays up. I mean, if you want to DFA Meneses, cool with that too. I think that helps your cause mightily. But that does it. We'll talk Nats next week after we see how these next, I guess it'll be six games at the time we record next, but the next six games or so go. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in the meantime, be sure to follow us on Twitter at DistrictBSB. Follow us on YouTube. That's where we will mainly be posting all of these episodes as well as our District Baseball episodes. You can find them at District Baseball over on YouTube and then on TikTok at District Baseball as well. We'll be back next week. And in the meantime, let's go Nats.
With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments. Get started at Chime.com/build. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Results may vary. See Chime.com for details. Terms and conditions apply. Go to Chime.com/disclosures for details.